Well, we saw last time that the religious leaders of the Jews had developed a very complex religious system based on the law of God that was given through Moses. The system provided these detailed interpretations and applications of the law for virtually every situation that a person might face in life. And the original intent was to help people not break the law of God and to apply it correctly in their life. Unfortunately, the resulting system ended up being a suffocating religious slavery of sorts that lost sight of the original intent of God's law. The spirit of the law was lost in their focus on the letter of the law. We talked about this last week, and as an example of what this system had produced was seen last time in the area of fasting. The Lord required the Jewish people to fast once per year on the Day of Atonement. But by the time of Jesus, the very devout Jews were fasting more than 104 times every year. Today, we're going to see another example where human-created interpretations and traditions created a system of do's and don'ts that missed the whole point of the original law that God gave his people. The conflict between the religious leaders and Jesus in the story today is going to be centered around the Sabbath, something much more important than fasting. The keeping of the Sabbath is the fourth commandment of the big Ten Commandments. Now, a blanket is a symbol of comfort and security and rest. In fact, this little blanket here, it's got these little cute ducks on it, and it says, all duckered out.
Is that yours?
Yeah, this is the one I sleep with every night. One of the most famous blankets in all the world is certainly the blanket of Linus from the Charlie Brown's cartoon. Now, before we get into the Bible story today, I want to tell you another story about a strange kingdom of people involving blankets. Now, this story is supposed to be a fun story, although it's a little bit odd. So feel free to laugh or whatever if you find something worth laughing at. But once upon a time, and that's a great way to start a story, is it not? There was a kingdom where the good and the benevolent king gave every person in the kingdom a beautiful blanket for warmth and comfort and security. They were the most incredible blankets the world had ever seen. The craftsmanship, the quality of the materials, the versatility were all unmatched. These blankets were given to the people to enjoy and to cherish as a symbol of his love for them. But over time, a strange thing happened. The people began to lose sight of what the blankets had been given to them for. They lost sight of both the purpose of the blankets and what they signified. They began to focus their attention on protecting their blankets, caring for their blankets, comparing their blankets, enshrining their blankets. They built sophisticated contraptions for carrying their blankets and moving their blankets. They developed detailed procedures for how to keep their blankets from getting dirty. And how to clean them when they did get dirty. And how to preserve the blankets. Their whole society began to be driven by their obsession with the blankets. Rather than the blankets being a comfort and help to them as the king had intended, the blankets became a burden for the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm warped, okay? Some of the people actually began to resent the king for their blankets. They saw the blankets as a curse put upon them by the king. The blankets were not bad. The blankets were good. But the people and their misguided focus on the blankets, rather than the giver of the blankets, created a monster of sorts out of both the blankets and the one who had given them the blankets in the first place. The end. Let's turn to Luke chapter 6. You may find some parallels in the blanket story and the stories that we look at today. Luke 6, beginning in verse 1, it says, "One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, 'Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?'" The disciples are accused of doing something that's against the law of God. Is that true? Well, first, the disciples picking some of the heads of grain as they're walking along is completely acceptable. In fact, the law of Moses, or the law of God given through Moses, explicitly allows for it. In Deuteronomy 23, verse 25, it says, "If you enter your neighbor's grain field, you may pick kernels with your hands, but you must not put a sickle to his standing grain." It was legal to pick kernels of grain from your neighbor's field. But if you got your sickle out and you started cutting into your neighbor's grain field, well, that would be a violation of the law. We have a similar unstated law in our own grocery stores. Yeah? I mean, they're not going to call the police on you if you are shopping in the produce section and you take a grape and pop it in your mouth and eat it. But you will have the cops called on you if you take a bag of grapes and try to leave the store without paying for them. So the complaint being raised against Jesus' disciples is not about what they're doing. It's about when they're doing it. Why are you doing what's unlawful on the Sabbath? The law of God regarding the keeping of the Sabbath said that no work was to be done on that day. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12. It says, "Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your maidservant, manservant or maidservant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservant and maidservant may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." The Sabbath day was a gift of God given to his people Israel, intended to be a blessing for them. The reference to the Israelites themselves once being slaves in Egypt, it makes the point that their new master, the Lord, is kind and generous in comparison to the harsh master they had before, the Egyptians. On the Sabbath day, the people of God were to rest from their work for the week and remember the redemptive work of God that he had done, both in creating the world at large and then also creating the nation of Israel specifically. Resting on this day, it honored God, serving as a testimony to one's belief in the personal, transcendent God who created their world. Resting on the Sabbath was also an act of faith and trust in God as their provider. God promised to take care of their needs on this day if they would honor him by resting in his love and his provision. The Sabbath law was a wonderful thing for God's people in every respect. But a number of traditions and interpretations and elaborations of the law developed over the years among the Jews and how the Sabbath was to be kept and honored. According to these traditions and elaborations, what the disciples were doing was considered work on the Sabbath, which was forbidden. See, the disciples, they were picking heads of grain, and it was considered reaping by those who held strictly to the traditions and the interpretation of the elders. And the disciples rubbing those heads of grain in their hands to remove the husk from the kernel, that was considered threshing. And throwing the husk away was considered winnowing. And eating the kernel showed that they had prepared food. So there were as many as 4 counts of violation against the Sabbath and what the disciples had done in this very simple act. See, there was a list of 39 main tasks that were prohibited on the Sabbath, including sowing, plowing, reaping, binding, threshing, winnowing, grinding, sifting, kneading, baking, shearing wool, bleaching or dyeing wool, spinning, weaving, tying or untying a knot, sewing or tearing 2 stitches or more, hunting, writing or erasing 2 letters or more, building, demolishing, starting or extinguishing a fire, hammering, carrying objects from one place to another, and several more. And then there were elaborate details about how each of those activities were defined. There were also a number of exemptions to the prohibitions that were listed. For example, circumcision was allowed to be done on the Sabbath. The Sabbath regulations could be disobeyed if one's life was in danger. But the penalty for intentionally violating the Sabbath was death. This was serious stuff. Well, these many elaborations on how the Sabbath law was to be obeyed, well, they were not part of the law of God that he had given to the Jewish people. They were created by the people themselves. I hope you guys are starting to get the picture about how the people created this complicated system of rules for themselves so that they would not break the actual law of God. But this protective fence that they had erected and constructed, it fails to achieve the ends intended. It misrepresented God. It buried him underneath this complicated mess of rules, so the people lost sight of the real God and also lost sight of the real will and desire and intention he had for his people. I'm sad to say that we see the same kind of thing taking place in the church in our own day. People start out with good intentions of honoring God with their life, but these traditions and interpretations and elaborations, they always, always, always degenerate into a legalistic quagmire of do's and don'ts. We then use this stuff to judge each other and make ourselves feel superior to one another. And worst of all, the real Jesus gets buried underneath all of this complicated mess so the people don't see the real Jesus or the real will and desire that he has for their lives. My advice to you, Christian, do not add a single thing to what Jesus has told you to do in regards to morality and the way he wants you to live your life. Do not add a single thing to it. Make your character trait grace, just like your God's character trait. Galatians 5:22, it says, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law." Verse 3, Jesus answered them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." Jesus answers the Pharisees' accusation with an example drawn from the life of David. And the incident that Jesus refers to is found in 1 Samuel chapter 21 in the first 6 verses there. David was running for his life from King Saul, who was enraged with jealousy toward David, wanting to kill him. And David, he had to flee the palace so quickly that he didn't have a chance to pack any supplies for his journey. So when he got to the town of Nob, which happened to be where the tabernacle of God was kept at that time, he was very hungry. And he asked Ahimelech, the priest, if he had any bread that he could spare. The only bread Ahimelech had at the moment was the consecrated bread that had been on the table in the holy place of the tabernacle. And he gave that bread to David and his companions. You see, the consecrated bread was 12 loaves, representing the 12 tribes, that were placed on the table in the holy place of the tabernacle. And fresh loaves were brought each Sabbath to replace the old ones, which were then given to the priests who were to eat it. They were the only ones that were to ever eat this old bread. However, on this occasion, rather than eating this bread himself, the priest gave it to David, who was in need of food. Now, by eating this bread, David technically broke the ceremonial law. But he was not condemned for it because of the circumstances. Jesus is teaching that human need is higher as a law over religious ceremonial law. There may be times when two commandments or laws will conflict with one another. And when that happens, he says human need takes precedent over religious law. That's actually a pretty startling thing that he says. The Sabbath had been created for man rather than for its own sake. It was a gift from God to his people. The purpose of the Sabbath was not to put people into some kind of shackles, but for their good, to provide them an opportunity to rest and to worship and to connect with one another and with themselves and with God. The religious leaders, in their zeal to prove their zeal and their devotion to God, had taken something that God had intended to be a blessing for human beings and turned it into this strict ethical code that literally choked the life out of people. Jesus said in Matthew 2:27, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." Verse 5, "Then Jesus said to them, 'The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath.'" In this statement, Jesus says that he has the authority to determine the use and acceptable observance of the Sabbath, because he's the Lord over the Sabbath. This is similar to what Jesus actually said about fasting. When they asked him why his disciples were not fasting like the other devoted people, Jesus basically said, "They don't need to fast right now because I'm with them." We have here another indirect claim to deity being made by Jesus. Jesus claims to have authority over the Sabbath, something that only God has. Jesus claimed to have authority over fasting, something that only God has. Jesus claimed to have authority to forgive people for their sins, something that only God has. See, Jesus goes way beyond being just a great moral teacher. He claimed to be something much more. He claimed to have authority and say so over everything that is done on this planet. He claimed to be God in the flesh among us. In this next story, Jesus, he's going to demonstrate that he does indeed have this authority over the Sabbath that he claims to have. Similar to what he did with the man who was paralyzed and he healed him. He says, "So you know that I have authority to forgive sins. I will heal this man." And he does. He claims to have the authority, and then he proves it by his actions. He's going to make the ultimate statement regarding his authority and power when he dies and then comes back to life. He'll say, "No one takes my life from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again." And then he does it. So in verse 6 it says, "On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath." So this man has a shriveled hand. We don't know exactly what the actual problem was, but apparently this man's hand was damaged in some way, and it rendered it unusable as a result of disease or accident or birth defect or something. And the religious leaders are watching Jesus closely, looking for a reason to accuse him of wrongdoing. They're watching to see if he's going to heal this man on the Sabbath. See, according to the way that they interpreted the Sabbath laws, they believed that healing this man on the Sabbath would be considered doing work. That would be work. And you don't do work on the Sabbath. Only if this man's condition was life-threatening would it be okay for Jesus to heal him on the Sabbath. They believe that the right thing to do would be for Jesus to wait until tomorrow, the next day, some other day besides the Sabbath in order to heal him. Now, this whole thing is laughable for us as outside observers, because how many people in all the world are able to heal someone like this on any day of the week? Here they are fussing about it not being right for Jesus to heal a man on the Sabbath, when they ought to be grateful that he's willing to heal anybody anytime. It's interesting that they don't doubt Jesus' ability to heal. They know he can heal. But they're watching to see if he will heal on the Sabbath. See, they're only concerned with protecting their Sabbath laws from being violated. They appear to have no interest in this man's well-being with the shriveled hand. The setting is actually a little bit like the showdown at the OK Corral. The tension is high in the air. People are wondering what Jesus is going to do. Triggers are ready to be pulled. But the big question hanging in the air here is not who's going to draw their guns first and kill the others, but if Jesus is going to restore life to this man or not. So in verse 8, Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up and stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it?" See, Jesus, he's fully aware of what the Pharisees and the teachers of the law are thinking, but instead of playing everything low key and avoiding the conflict, Jesus actually tells this man to stand up in front of everyone. No one's asked Jesus any questions this time around, but he knows what's racing through their minds, so he asked them a question to bring this whole thing to center stage and to challenge him in front of everyone present. And he asks, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? Now, this question is kind of like asking a married man, do you beat your wife often? I mean, no matter how you answer it, it's the wrong answer. See, the way Jesus formulates his question to the religious leaders, they're in trouble. Either way, they answer this question. They don't think Jesus should do anything on the Sabbath, good or bad. But Jesus doesn't give them that option in the way that he phrases the question. For Jesus, anything less than complete wholeness of a person is unacceptable and reason enough for him to act. He treats our life the same way. Anything less than complete wholeness is unacceptable to him. We might say, you know, I'm good enough. Things are manageable like this. I'll get along. But the Lord wants us completely whole. And he's going to continue working on us, moving us toward wholeness, even though there are times in our own lives when we want to say, hey, you know, it's okay. It's good enough just like this. I'm fine. Okay? He says, nope. I'm going to complete the work I started in you. I'm not stopping until you're completely whole. So in verse 10, he looked around at them all and then said to the man, stretch out your hand. He did so, and his hand was completely restored. It says Jesus looked around at them all, but not one said a word. No one was courageous enough to take on the question that Jesus had asked them. They knew that he had them, and there was nothing they could do about it. So Jesus tells this man to stretch out his hand, and it is completely, instantly restored. In verse 11 it says, but they were furious and began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus. The reaction of these religious leaders is not one of being humbled and recognizing that they were wrong. Instead, they become more angry and more filled with hatred toward Jesus than ever. It says they were furious. They began to discuss with each other how they're going to get rid of this troublemaker. And in Matthew and Mark's version of this same story, they say they actually go out and they begin to plot how they're going to kill Jesus. See, they didn't think that it was right to heal someone on the Sabbath or to pick a few heads of grain on the Sabbath. But apparently, plotting to kill an innocent man is perfectly legal. In closing this morning, do you remember the kingdom where the king had given the people those beautiful blankets to enjoy and to cherish as a symbol of his love for them? You remember how they became so focused on the blankets that they lost sight of the one who had given them the blankets? You remember how the blankets became a burden for them rather than a blessing because of all of the stuff that they created to protect the blankets and clean the blankets and preserve the blankets? See, the king, he had wealth enough to give them more blankets if they needed them, if they lost one, if they misplaced it, if they soiled it, if they tore it, if they ruined it in some way. Very wealthy king. He wanted them to enjoy what he gave them. He wanted them to remember his love for them, and he wanted them to respond with love for him. The religious leaders of Jesus' day, they had turned something that God had intended as a blessing for his people, the Sabbath, into something that was a heavy burden for them instead. The same thing can happen with Christianity in our day. God sent his son Jesus Christ to walk among us, to teach us about God, and to die as a sacrifice for our sins so that we can know God personally and we can have a relationship with him. Christianity is supposed to be a wonderful relationship with God through Jesus Christ. But it can be made into a very lame thing, full of do's and don'ts and better nots, and stripped of its life and power. The question that I ask you today is, have you lost sight of the real Jesus? Have you allowed church culture to hide the real Jesus from you? Have you allowed him to get buried under a bunch of self-created legalistic stuff so that his grace is hidden from you? Jesus was all about saving life, healing people, making people whole. He's still all about that. If you've allowed our image of Jesus and the example that you are following be something else, then you need to get rid of whatever that thing is. Because whatever that thing is, it's not the real Jesus. Galatians 5:1, it says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. In Ephesians 3:12, it says, in him and through faith in him, we may approach God with freedom and confidence. Let's bow our heads. Lord, what an awesome thing you have done for us. You have given us the greatest gift imaginable. You've given us new life. You've given us the opportunity to know you personally. Jesus, you have lived and died for us and came back to life for us. And you gave all of this, not because we even asked for it. It was your choice. You're the one who stepped into the riot called humanity and chose to save us, chose to make us whole. Lord, help us to not throw ourselves back under our own self-imposed slavery after you have delivered us from all of that stuff. I pray for those here this morning, Lord, that maybe have never really seen the real Jesus. I pray that today that they have caught a glimpse of him. They have started to get hold of this thing called grace. God, that they would enter into a relationship with you, that they would experience salvation themselves for the first time. Maybe those who think they've always been walking with you, Lord, but it's just been church culture. I pray that you break through all that. You bring us into a real life-changing, life-affirming, life-revolutionizing relationship with you. Make each one of us whole, Lord. In the name of your Son, Jesus, we pray these things. Amen.